The sage Karadama accepted silence as a vow in order to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and take shelter of Him exclusively. Without association, he traveled the surface of the globe as a sannyasi, devoid of any relationship with fire or shelter. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Here the words anagnir anuketanaha are very significant. A sannyasi should be completely detached from fire and any residential quarters. A grihastha has a relationship with fire, either for offering sacrifices or for cooking. But a sannyasi is freed from these two responsibilities. He does not have to cook or offer fire for sacrifice because he is always engaged in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he has already accomplished all ritualistic performances of religion. Aniketana means without lodging. He should not have his own home, but should depend completely on the Supreme Lord for his food and lodging. He should travel. Mauna means silence. Unless one becomes silent, he cannot think completely about the pastimes and activities of the Lord. It is not that because one is a fool and cannot speak nicely, he therefore takes the vow of Mauna. Rather, one becomes silent so that people will not disturb him. It is said by Chanakya Pandit that a rascal appears very intelligent as long as he does not speak. But speaking is the test. The so-called silence of a silent impersonalist, Swami, indicates that he has nothing to say. He simply wants to beg. But the silence adopted by Kardama Muni was not like that. He became silent for relief from nonsensical talk. One is called a Muni when he remains grave and does not talk nonsense. Maharaj Ambarish set a very good example. Whenever he spoke about the pastimes of the Lord. Mauna necessitates refraining from nonsensical talking and engaging the talking facility in the pastimes of the Lord. In that way, one can chant and hear about the Lord in order to perfect his life. Vratam means that one should take a vow as explained in Bhagavad Gita. The sage Kardama accepted silence as a vow in order to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and take shelter of Him exclusively. Without association, he traveled over the surface of the globe as a sannyasi, devoid of any relationship with fire or shelter. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, entitled The Renunciation of Karadama Muni, Text Number 42. With the blessings of his son, Kapila Dev, as well as his wife, Devahuti, Kardama Muni has entered into the forest as a sannyasi. He has quite perfectly fulfilled his responsibilities as a grihastha. And now, setting the example that the ultimate first priority of life is self-realization. The Varnashram system, or Daivi Varnashram system, teaches humanity how we can perform our prescribed social and occupational duties in such a way that at all times we are making spiritual progress. It is not that we put our Krishna consciousness off until we come to a later stage. Sometimes, under the influence of passion, ignorance, even a devotee may think, let me just take care of these things, then I will take my Krishna consciousness serious. There are some debts, there are some family obligations, there are some social duties. These will be taken care of, then I will become serious about bhakti. However, we do not know if tomorrow will ever come. That is the nature of this world. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. Therefore, it is extremely serious. Now is the time that we have to become very serious about Krishna consciousness. And Daivi Varnashram teaches us how, in whatever stage of life we're in, we're simultaneously cultivating our bhakti. We should always be going upward. Really, we cannot remain in the same place. Remaining in the same place is like being in the swift current of a river and thinking, I will just remain where I am. The stream is pushing you downstream to the ocean. In this case, the ocean of illusion, the ocean of birth and death. Either we must be very determined to swim upstream, or we will be pushed downstream. It's not that you'll just remain where you are, and Krishna and Maya and everyone will wait, everything is on hold button, until you get things together in your life. It simply never works that way. So whether one is brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra, under the direction of the guru, sadhu, and shastra, we should always be making progressive advancement in Krishna consciousness. Even Gaudama Muni, he was grihastha. He created that beautiful aerial mansion. But still, everything he was doing was ultimately for the service of Krishna. And what was the evidence of that? Krishna became his son, Kapiladev. But after Krishna became his, can you imagine leaving a son like that? Lord Kapiladev's all attractive. To leave a home with Devahuti, most beautiful woman in all of the world, practically the universe. The demigods were mad after her. When she was young, of course, you know, she was just as beautiful when she was grown and when she was a girl. But when she was living at the house of her father, playing on the roof of the palace, the demigods would come from the heavens just to watch her. And when they'd see her, they would become so infatuated, they would literally fall down from their airplanes onto the ground. Have you ever seen any demigods falling in the ground of Beverly Hills or Hollywood? These ladies are supposed to be so beautiful and glamorous, but the demigods don't even look at them. was the beauty of Devahuti? And what was the faithfulness? She was willing to just silently serve her husband, even though she was becoming emaciated and starving with no provisions whatsoever. And then her husband gave her everything because he felt sympathy for her. What a virtuous, loving personality she was. How to give up that? And as far as sons, Kapila Dev was absolutely 100% well-behaved. He loved his parents dearly. He was beautiful. He was the reservoir of all good qualities. How to give up a family like that? But Kardama Muni, because he fulfilled his responsibilities to show proper example, he went to the next stage and entered into the forest. And in this verse, it is describing so nicely some of the attributes that he lived by while he was in the forest. It is explained he was completely detached from fire or shelter. Prabhupada explains Grihastha is supposed to do yajna. Of course, in age of Kali, yajna is Harinam. But in previous ages, the Grihastha was supposed to perform the fire yajna on a daily basis. And also it's the duty of the Grihastha that there be cooking for the family, for one's maintenance. Ultimately, the cooking is offered to Krishna and then prasad is distributed. But Kardama Muni, he didn't care anything about eating or shelter. He was simply living in caves, under trees, on the banks of rivers. No fixed residence. No mortgage. No utilities. It's actually quite sublime, if you can do it. He just lived wherever he was. This is the way such renowned sadhus are. They just perform their bhajan and their worship and they travel and they preach, and wherever they happen to be, they just lay down to go to sleep. Very simple life. No residence. Sukadev Goswami describes for people in the renounced order of life, what do you need a house for when there are caves in the mountains? What do you need a bed for when there's so many flat surfaces on the earth? What do you need a pillow for when you have two arms? You already have two pillows. What do you need clothes for? Are there not bark in the tree that you can wear? Haribo. This is the type of simplicity that these great sages and rishis live by. And Sukadev Goswami, he didn't just speak it, but he, what do they say in America, you must walk your talk? Well, he didn't wear any clothes. He didn't even bother getting the bark on the trees. And he lived in the forest. So when he's speaking, there's tremendous potency because he practices what he preaches. So Kardama Muni was living like this. Really, what is the spirit behind this type of lifestyle? That we should understand. Because obviously, people in today's world, very rare that anyone can actually live like this. With bark of trees for clothes, with no residence, just withstanding the rain and the heat and the cold. As far as cooking Kardama Muni, there was no cooked food. He didn't even beg for food. He just ate whatever grew in the forest. Such a simple life. But really, the spirit behind it is to completely depend on Krishna, to make Krishna our only shelter. and whether we can actually live in this lifestyle externally, or whether we have a little easier of a physical condition in our life, the real essence is that we're completely depending on Krishna. We're not depending on the superficial, temporary shelters of this world. That is actual renunciation. Srila Prabhupada explained that one in the renounced order of life should be able to go anywhere and be fearless. Why? Because just completely depending on Krishna. Mare Krishna rake Krishna mare ke. If you want to save me, Krishna, nothing can harm me. And if you want to harm me, Krishna, then I'm yours. Do as you like. Bhajahure mana sri nandanandana abhaya charanaravindane. We become fearless when we actually learn to find shelter in Krishna. Materialistic life means to seek shelter in the fallible soldiers of material existence. And the scriptures teach us to give up faith, to give up hope in these fallible soldiers. Because ultimately they cannot save us at the greatest time of need. We are depending on Krishna at every moment, for every breath, for every heartbeat, at every second. Krishna is saving our lives at every second. If he does not provide air, we'll suffocate immediately. If he doesn't provide the sun, we'll freeze to death immediately. If he doesn't provide the rain and the earth and the grains, we'll starve to death within a day. Krishna is saving us. And are we grateful? Are we recognizing? So therefore, a devotee learns to take shelter of Krishna, especially in the beautiful form of his holy name. Kardama Muni took a vow of silence. Srila Prabhupada is explaining, what is the spirit of silence? There are people called Moni Babas. I remember when I was traveling in India long ago, before I was in contact with the Hare Krishna movement, I would sometimes meet Moni Babas in the forest, in places of pilgrimage. They would not speak. Usually Moni Babas carry a piece of slate and a stick of chalk, and whatever they want to say, they write. And it's unbelievable how some of these Moni Babas, how much nonsense they write. It's just nonsense talk. That means that's what's going on in their mind. They're not physically speaking, they're just writing. Prabhupada would often say that if a disciple speaks all nonsense, sometimes the guru tells him to take a vow of silence. But what is the real spirit of silence? Not to speak materialistic subject matters, but to keep always the names and glories of the Supreme Lord upon one's mouth. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture explained the nature of prajalpa. Prajalpa means useless, unnecessary, nonsense talk. Prabhupada explains that when you speak prajalpa, what happens is your very life, your spiritual life energy, is just draining out from your heart through your mouth. You're just draining your spiritual energy through your nonsense talk. You're draining your real life. But we do not recognize that. In fact, from people who are too much conditioned by the modes of material nature, prajalpa is like nectar. But what comes out of our mouth is so very, very important. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that when your mouth is speaking criticism of others, especially Vaishnavas, what you're actually doing with your mouth is you're drinking poison. Nothing less than that. And it's actually worse than arsenic. Because arsenic, what is the big deal? The worst it can do is kill your body. But it doesn't disturb your spiritual progress. But when you speak nonsense, that prajalpa, when you're speaking criticism of others, that sound vibration is like a poison that is killing your propensity for devotional service, which is our eternal relationship with Krishna. Raghunath Das Goswami described that prajalpa is like a prostitute that has come to steal away your chastity to God. And cheat you of your propensity to serve Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. That is a fact. Prajalpa steals away our propensity for loving devotional service. That is the most precious treasure of our whole lives. Really, what is bhakti? It is cultivating and developing our propensity for loving service to the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, if you can control the tongue, all the other senses come in line. But if you cannot control the tongue, very difficult. Actually, the human body is considered a boat. Yes? And the captain of the boat is the spiritual master. And the favorable breezes are the Vedic teachings. But one time I was just looking at boats and trying to contemplate this analogy. Should I tell you my thoughts? You can accept them or reject them as you like, but this is what I was thinking. That the whole boat, the direction of the boat is determined by, is it called a rudder? It's just the little thing at the back, right? It's not very big. It just kind of goes like this. The rudder goes like this and the whole boat goes, and the rudder, yes? The boat is huge. The rudder is just a small thing. But according to which way the rudder goes, the whole boat goes that direction. Is that correct? Anybody knows boating? Yes. And I was just examining that rudder, and it actually looks just like a little tongue. Really, it looks like a tongue. It's a fact. According to how we move our tongue, that's the way the direction of our whole life goes. In this boat of human life. If you criticize a Vaishnava, you could lose everything. You go in the direction of fall down. If you speak prajalpa, your whole consciousness, your whole life is misdirected. But if we use our tongue to taste the nectar of the sweetness of Krishna's holy names and glories, then the boat of our human life is going toward the spiritual world always. So there is great emphasis on how to control the tongue. Prabhupada explains there's two functions of the tongue, to taste and to vibrate. so we should taste nice prasad, the right type of prasad. Otherwise, if we eat other things, we become karmically bound by everything we eat. Prabhupada explains that even if you're in a even vegetarian diet is sinful. It's not as sinful, but still, it is karmic. Krishna says, any food that is not offered for me in sacrifice, you're eating only sin. Now, Krishna will only accept foods in the mode of goodness, vegetarian foods. But in order to not be bound by karmic degradation, a devotee only tastes Krishna prasad. Food that is spiritually surcharged. And then Prabhupada said, and not too much. Sometimes it's all right, but Prabhupada would sometimes encourage. But in general, not too much. And then the other function of the tongue is to vibrate. This is the most difficult thing. We have seen people with our own eyes who really, they could fast like anything, but they can't stop criticizing others. We have seen people who can perform such incredible, rigorous tapasya for the body, where they're practically eating nothing, but still talking nonsense. Rupa Goswami explains in Upadeshamrita these six pushings, these vegams. And one is the speaking tendency. It's very, very difficult. There's just this urge, there's just this longing to just recklessly speak. But we are responsible for everything we say. There was one Brahmin who came to Lord Chaitanya and said, I am very sinful. In the past, I criticized you, and worse, I criticized your devotees. What should I do to atone for this offense? And Lord Chaitanya said, criticizing Vaishnava is drinking poison. The only antidote for that poison is praising the Vaishnavas and chanting the holy names. Now you give up ever criticizing others and you praise the Vaishnavas and glorify Krishna and chant his holy names. That is the process. And unless our tongue is busy chanting and singing the names and glories of the Lord and his devotees, then it will just be bound to speak all nonsense things. That urge to speak is so strong, so powerful. Today is Odanashasti. It was announced this morning. Would you like me to speak with my tongue this story? In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada describes it briefly. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, there is a very nice description also. Odan Shasti, which is a very, very special and glorious festival in Jagannath Puri for Lord Jagannath. It is described how Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was approached by Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit told him that the mantra that my guru has given me, it's not clear in my heart. Could you repeat that mantra for me? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, your guru is Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He's a very great soul. If anyone else were to tell you your mantra again, that person would be a great offender. You have received this mantra from a great personality. And then he said, in my heart, I believe he will be coming very soon to Jagannath Puri. Lord Chaitanya would call out, Pundarik, my father. Because in Lord Sri Krishna's Leela, Pundarik Vidyanidhi is Vrishabhanu Maharaj, who is the father of Sri Radharani. Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Sri Radharani. So on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction, just a few days later, Pundarik Vidyanidhi arrived in Jagannath Puri. His very, very dear friend was Swarup Damodar Goswami. Before Swarup Damodar Goswami accepted the renounced order of life, he lived in Navadvip. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi and Swarup Damodar Goswami were really best friends. They had such deep love and attachment to one another in their service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So naturally, when he came to Puri, Swarup Damodar Goswami was so happy to greet him. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ecstatic to see his devotee. On the day of Odan Shasti, Lord Chaitanya took all his devotees to Jagannath's temple to see this incredible festival. It is a festival where Lord Jagannath is offered brand new starched garments. On that day, there was mardangas and gongs, karatals, horns, stringed instruments. So many musical instruments were playing for the pleasure of Jagannath. And garment after garment after garment was being offered to the deities. There was yellow garments, blue garments, green garments, pink garments, orange garments, red garments, all varieties, just garment after garment. It was a festival of garments. And each garment was embroidered with gold and pearls. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates were watching this, they were just thrilled with ecstasy to see the beautiful, gorgeous, elaborate offerings being presented to Jagannath. Then they were offering various flower ornaments. They offered the deities flower bracelets, flower necklaces, flower crowns, flower garlands. It was a wonderful festival. Then there was big feast of bhoga offered. Then they offered a grand aarti, offering all 16 types of puja paraphernalia. There was incense, lamps, so many lamps. There was Brahmins chanting mantras, and Lord and his associates were having Harinam Sankirtan. In this way, the Lord and his devotees enjoyed this Odana Shasti festival throughout the night in great happiness. The Lord is teaching us that our real happiness is seeing Krishna serve nicely. Srila Prabhupada taught like that. If you decorate the deity nicely, then you lose the desire to decorate yourself. In other words, you lose your vanity. If you cook nice food for the deities, as you develop love, as you develop actual attachment to Krishna, then just seeing the deities getting nice bhoga satisfies your heart. You don't need any nice things. we see in the life of the Goswamis. They were happy just with some coarse wheat flour mixed with some Jamuna water, made into a ball and thrown into fire and then eaten. But the real satisfaction, they didn't need anything but that when they would see Radha Govinda, Radha Madan Mohan offer very nice bhoga. When you water the root of the tree, all parts of the tree become satisfied. That is Krishna consciousness. In the morning, we show the deities what they look like in the mirror. By doing that, we're supposed to lose the desire to look in the mirror ourselves, except maybe to put on tilak. Now we see devotees could live so simple. Look at Amala Bhakta Prabhu, just a simple little mendicant. But when he sees the deities with crowns and garments and beautiful bhoga and ornaments, he dances in ecstasy. These people in Hollywood, they have garments and they have even better, as far as cost-wise, they have even more expensive garments and ornaments on themselves. And none of them are dancing in ecstasy. Taking sleeping pills to get to sleep at night. They're in so much anxiety. But here he is. He has nothing but just seeing the deities with the ornaments. He's dancing. He's blissful. That is Krishna consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya and his devotees were just feeling transcendental ecstatic bliss, just seeing the deities being worshipped so beautifully. There is the story where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya cooked a very, very opulent offering of bhoga for his deities, for Jagannath. And Lord Chaitanya saw it and was simply weeping in ecstasy. He was so happy to see that Krishna has eaten nicely. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Now you take the remnants." He said, no, I don't need it. Just give me a little boiled vegetables and rice. That's all I need. I'm happy to see that the deities are eating so nicely." That's the service attitude. We may not be on that platform, but that should be the platform we're aspiring for. That should be what we're longing for. Not to acquire, but to serve. That is satisfaction. And that is why deity worship has been introduced by our beloved acharyas. To give us the opportunity to use our mind, use our senses, to offer the best to Krishna. And then we could be satisfied with such a simple, simple life. And you see, in society today, if somebody dresses themselves very nicely, or has all kinds of nice possessions, people may say, "Oh, very nice," but in their heart, they're usually envious. Yes? They're envious. There's conflict. There's competition. There's jealousy. But in a Vaishnava community, when everybody gives it to Krishna, everyone is united and blissful together because they see Krishna has it. As soon as we take it for ourselves, it creates conflict and disunity. But when we offer it to Krishna, it creates perfect unity, harmony, and love. That is Prabhupada's gift. In the old days in temples, I remember New Vrindavan, we were eating horse feed. Maybe I shouldn't tell you this, but it's true. I was the assistant cook. Assistant means I used to just wash the pots and everything. It's not a very prestigious position, but actually it's doing anything for Krishna is the highest. So the cook said, "You know, bring the grains for," because every day we had this thing called upma. And he said, bring the grains for the lunch. That was the only thing you had for lunch at one time. So I went down, and I came up. I said, there's no grains down there. He said, there is. I saw it this morning. Get it. This is Sudanu. He was the head cook. Sudanu Prabhu. So I went down again, and I looked all over, and I just didn't see any bags of grains. I came back up, and I said, there's no grains down there. He said, I saw it this morning. Go. I went again. I came back up. I said, there's nothing there. He said, was there anything there? I said, yes. He said, what? I said, there were these sacks. There was these plastic sacks with big red letters saying horse feed with pictures of horses on them. He said, that's it. He said, it's a 100-pound sack. He said, that's what we're eating every day. That's all we have. We got these horse feet, and then he had me grind it in this hand grinder until it became kind of like, not ground, just kind of cut up. Then he boiled it in water and added some cumin seeds, and that was called upma. So it was very simple food. And that's all anybody got in those days. But still, when we'd see the deities getting sandesh and burfi and gulab jamuns and samosas and pakoras and chutneys and sabjis and everything, we were all happy. We were so happy. Especially when the Mahaprasad was served out. Everyone just got just little tiny pieces, but those little tiny pieces were very priceless in our lives. But yes, why would anyone want to live in a place like that? One time, when I got, I had this old, actually when I came, my dhoti wasn't like the Hare Krishna people's dhotis. So they told me, you have to get the proper dhoti. I said, well, where am I going to get it? You just have to find it somewhere on the mud or in the ground. Winter came, I needed a coat. I said, where's the coat? They said, in the Brahmacharya ashrams, everything you want is in that bin in the barn. I went to the bin in the barn. It wasn't even things that devotees posited there. This barn, it was a 120-year-old building with an old barn, and God knows who lived there before, but the old clothes that they just threw out, they would throw in this bin. And it was just a wooden bin, dilapidated, and it was just stacked up clothes. And the amazing thing, it was all covered in ice. You'd actually have to dig through it, and then everything was like hard. It's like cardboard pieces, and you have to try to figure out what's going to fit. It's all torn up, and that's, for years, that's the only place we could get folk clothes. So could you imagine what we look like? It wasn't like at O'Hare Airport, you used to wear ties and suits because you wanted to look distinguished, but there we looked like animals, practically. You have to somehow or other get the blanket to be thawed out. I remember what I found? I found this old army blanket, an army surplus blanket with some holes in it, and I thawed it out. And that was the only warm thing I had for years and years. I slept in it. It was the only thing I could sleep in to keep, there was no heat. It was freezing cold in the winter. It was my winter coat. It was my bedding. It was my everything. And I wore it until it practically disintegrated. And I was just like everybody else. But yet when it was time for greeting the deities, everyone would just be in great, great anticipation to see what the
what the deities would be wearing. Believe me, no one was jealous about what each other was wearing. Nobody even looked twice what anybody else was wearing. But minutes before the deities' curtains would open, everyone would just be, they would be guessing what they're going to be wearing today. And then the conch shells would blow and the deities would open and everyone would just, every day, breathtaking. Ha, ha. Beautiful garments, beautiful ornaments, beautiful garlands. Such satisfaction. That's Krishna consciousness. Not that you have to wear like that, but Krishna consciousness means we take pleasure in work, in unifying to do wonderful things for the deities, for Krishna, for the spiritual master. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees were so happy to see beautiful offerings of bhoga, beautiful garments, beautiful ornaments being offered to Lord Jagannath. And with this satisfaction, they all walked with Lord Chaitanya back to Gambira in the house of Kashi Mishra in order to... The Lord said goodbye to them, and all the devotees went to their respective places. Now, Pundarik Vidyanidhi and Swarup Damodar Goswami, they took a little prasad and then they began to talk. Pundarik Vidyanidhi said that something has entered into my heart and I must reveal it to you. He said, I do not understand. Why are the pujaris offering Jagannath starched, unwashed garments? According to the Shruti, according to the Smriti, starched garments are considered contaminated. They are never to be offered to the Lord until they are washed. According to the rules of the scriptures, if you even touch a starched, unwashed garment, your hand is contaminated. You must immediately wash your hand. So why in this country are they offering starched, unwashed, contaminated garlands, one after another, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Jagannath? Pundarik Vidyanidhi, or Swarup Damodar Goswami responded, there is no fault, there is no offense by what they are doing, because Lord Jagannath is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is not bound by any of these rules and regulations. He can do whatever he wants. He is supremely independent. If he wants to accept these unstarched garments, then that is for him to decide. If he did not want this, then why is he not inspiring the king to not offer them to him? Pundarik Vidyanidhi responded, what you're saying is true. Lord Jagannath is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's supremely independent. He's not bound by any rules or any regulations. But that doesn't mean his servants can imitate him. That doesn't mean the devotees could think that they're beyond all rules and regulations just because a servant of the Lord who is. It is not right what they are doing. These are starched, unwashed, contaminated garments. Swarup Damodar Goswami said, there is no fault in what they are doing. If the Lord is accepting it, we should accept it. Then Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he said, actually the Lord is independent. He could do anything he wants. And then they were laughing and laughing and joking. Pundarik Vidyanidhi then went to sleep. As he slept, he had a dream. Would you like to hear this dream? He saw Lord Jagannath and Lord Balaram walking toward him. And their eyes were full of anger. Jagannath and Balaram both came right up to him and began violently slapping him in the cheeks. Just slapping him and slapping him and slapping him again and again and again. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was terrified. With angry red eyes, they were slapping and slapping with their hands. And they had rings on their fingers. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was literally crying out, "Lord, Lord, Lord, Krishna, Krishna, save me, Krishna, save me, Krishna, save me. What offense have I done? Why are you beating me like this? What have I done to offend you, my Lord?" Lord Jagannath spoke in a very angry voice. He said, "Your offenses have no end. You know nothing about me, and you know nothing about my devotees. You worship me, and then you criticize my devotees, and you live in Jagannath Puri? Get out from this place. Why are you here? You're such a big, big Brahmin with all your big, big rules and regulations. Why are you here? You'll lose your caste. Get out. You are worshiping me as the Lord, and you are criticizing my devotees. I cannot tolerate this." "You have criticized the starched, unwashed garments that I am accepting with great pleasure." Pundarik Vidyanidhi was weeping. He was just like, he fell at the Lord's lotus feet in the dream. He fell at his feet. He grasped onto his feet, like, "Please forgive me, Lord. Please forgive me. I am the worst sinner. I am the worst offender. I am the most fallen soul. Please, please, please forgive me." And Lord Jagannath said, "Because you are my devotee, I am kind to you. Therefore, I have punished you." Then Lord Jagannath and Balaram smiled at him. And then Pundarik Vidyanidhi saw them walk back into the temple of Jagannath in his dream. When dawn came, Pundarik Vidyanidhi woke up and he was astonished. Because his cheeks were bright red from being beaten all night by Lord Jagannath. And he was thinking, how auspicious this is. How auspicious that the Lord has punished me. He's accepted me as his servant and punished me. Meanwhile, Swarup Damodar Goswami was waiting for him, because every morning they would meet together, take their bath, and then go to see Lord Jagannath together. So when he met Swarup Damodar Goswami, Swarup Damodar Goswami noticed that there was something different about Pundarik Vidyanidhi. The cheeks on his face were just, looked like they were beaten up all night. They were all red and irritated. And he said, "What happened to you? What has caused this change in your appearance?" And Pundarik Vidyanidhi explained exactly what happened. He said, because with my mouth I criticized the Lord's servants, the Lord beat my mouth. He has given me very suitable punishment. This is mercy. And Swarup Damodar Goswami was in ecstasy. He said, never, never have I ever heard of such a thing, of the Lord appearing in a dream and beating his devotee. So there is no one more fortunate than you. Krishna didn't even beat Pradyumna, his own son, like this. He never even treats the demigods like this. But Pundarik Vidyanidhi, because of his intimate, loving relationship with the Lord punished him. Of course, this is on a very, very high transcendental platform, but we should know that when the Lord punishes his devotee, it is always his mercy. When the Lord punishes his devotee, it is always to teach us a very, very good lesson, and that is his kindness. So we should be grateful when we are punished. We should not complain. We should not criticize. We should not lose faith. We should be grateful. This is the Lord's mercy. This is the Lord's kindness. This is the Lord's love, that he's trying to put me on the right track. He's trying to teach me. And therefore, he's giving me this punishment. So Swarup Damodar Goswami and Pundarik Vidyanidhi, they were holding hands together. That was their affectionate relationship. And they were laughing and joking, and Swarup Damodar Goswami just couldn't get over this, that never before in history has anyone gotten mercy like this. So that is the story of Odana Shashti, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leelas. I thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.